Elizabeth Banks has teamed up with State Street Global Advisors to uncover the bold moves mid-cap companies make to thrive and survive. It's a podcast and film series called Crazy Enough to Work. Discover it online and wherever you find your podcasts. Provided by State Street Global Advisors Funds Distributors, LLC.
With your money briefing, I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. As college students embark on their first or next year away at school, it's important to note that they can get a head start on a strong credit rating while working toward graduation. Details coming up, but first these money and market stories you should know. The Pew Research Center reports that about half of American adults lived in middle-class households in 2016. That's down slightly from 51% in 2011, 54% in 2001, and 61% in 1971. Meanwhile, the percentage of people in lower and upper income households has steadily climbed higher over the same period. Pew Research notes that the median income of middle class households increased just 6% from 2010 to 2016 to about $78,500, while the median income increased for upper income households by 9% to $187,900 over the same period, and lower-income households increased their income by just 5% over the same decade to about $25,600. U.S. worker productivity rose this spring at the best pace in more than 3 years. The productivity of non-farm workers increased at a 2.9% seasonally adjusted annual rate in the second quarter from the prior 3 months. And that's a revision upward from last month's report. It was the best quarterly growth rate since the first 3 months of 2015. Many economists say better productivity makes it easier for employers to reward workers with larger wages. Worker wages have increased at a slow rate compared with other periods of historically low unemployment. One reason could be that workers have not been able to increase their output. And check out the feature on the WSJ app of the roughly 17 million members of Generation Z. Those are people born from 1997 up to a few years ago who are now adults and starting to enter the U.S. workforce. The journal says employers haven't seen a generation like this since the Great Depression. While demographers see parallels with a silent generation born between 1928 and 1945 that carried the economic scars of the Great Depression and World War II into adulthood while reaping the rewards of a booming post-war economy in the 1950s and 1960s. The broad result is a scarred generation, cautious and hardened by economic and social turbulence. So how are businesses adapting? Well, among other things, companies are reworking training so it replicates YouTube-style videos that appeal to Gen X workers who were reared on smartphones.
Sponsored by Harvard Business School Executive Education, offering 4 comprehensive leadership programs that transform rising executives into confident business leaders. To learn more, visit hbs.me/transform. That's hbs.me/transform.
As the nation's college students continue their higher education journey or are just starting out, one thing they have in common is eventually entering the so-called real world, and in most cases needing to establish good credit. Wall Street Journal news editor Demetria Gallegos is here with some tips for college students to help prepare them with some assistance from their parents for the real world. So, Demetria, a lot of us remember credit card companies would get offers in the hands of college students every which way they could. That really doesn't happen anymore.
Back when I was in college, they were passing out pamphlets at the freshman orientation tables. But these days, ever since the passing of the Credit Card Act of 2009, people under the age of 21 need to have either a cosigner or a proof of independent income. And the result has been far fewer credit applications for that age group.
So let's start with college freshmen. Parents could consider adding their child as an authorized user of their credit card. And that's kind of one option for them.
Yeah, that's one of the first things we recommend, but only when the parent's credit rating is strong, which is to say high 600s or higher, because otherwise you could actually be doing some harm to your child by associating them with your own credit profile. Another good early option is to apply for a secured credit card. So in this case, an 18-year-old could basically apply for, say, a Discover secured credit card, give Discover $200, be granted a supposed credit line of $200, and each month, instead of the company extending credit to that student, they're actually spending their own money and then replenishing it by paying the bill back. That actually will start to build a strong credit score, assuming you use it responsibly, use it frequently, And use it sparingly as well, which is to say no more than 30% of the credit line should pretty much be charged up at any point in time. So your credit utilization is low, which means you seem to show a good balance in your credit risk.
So show some discipline and don't tear through the credit every month.
That's right. And also at 18, you can begin to request your free credit report each year from the big three credit reporting agencies. You can do that through annualcreditreport.com. And even if you don't have much of a credit profile, this is going to help you start to understand how profiles are built. It's going to also flag you for any early signs of fraud or misuse.
All right. And then as sophomores, it's interesting that you write in your journal story that simply paying bills like utilities or cell phone bills won't necessarily improve a credit score.
I think that comes as a surprise to a lot of families because you've taught your kid everything you can about, you know, responsibly paying their bills on time, using a debit card so they don't get in over their head. All of that is invisible to the credit reporting companies. Because really what's happening here is you're being given a month-to-month arrangement. If you don't pay your bill, they'll cut off your service. So it's not nearly the same thing as a credit application.
And one of the things a student could do, if they're paying payments like rent payments on housing off campus, they can work something out with a landlord that could actually make those payments visible to the credit companies. Is that right?
Yes, there are some services that can report up to the credit reporting firms a rent payment history. So if you know you can pay your rent regularly, and if your landlord is registered with one of these companies like Credit Karma or Clear Now, that can be a way to begin to build a credit score. Some of them actually guarantee that they will help raise your score by 30 or 40 points. But the problem is that most of those services are for a monthly fee.
And also, as sophomores, if students are making car payments, that could work to their advantage.
Yeah, the car dilemma is interesting. I think so many families have made arrangements with their student who may need a car on campus for the student to, say, cover gas and insurance while the parent, you know, covers car payments. If you flip that around and you have the same amount of money coming out of the student's budget every month, but they are signed on as a co-signer for a car loan, then suddenly the credit reporting firms are aware of that student having been granted credit as a co-signer, and then they are now tracking those payments, and the student is in a good position to benefit from a solid payment history.
And then as juniors, the real world begins to rear its head, and students would be well served to begin paying down some student debt.
Yes, this was really interesting. So you may think you still need student loans for the next year or two to complete your college funding plan, but what you can do is to begin making very small monthly payments, sometimes, you know, just like $50 a month, something much smaller than the payment that's going to be due ultimately once you graduate and go into regular payments. But during those years, even if you're still taking out loans, you can start making those small payments against your previous year's loans, and you can develop a very strong track record that way.
And for seniors, if they still don't have a credit card by then, they should apply for one before graduating. But those who do have a card could negotiate for better terms if they've been up to date with payments.
Right. If you've taken some of these steps during your early years, and by the way, not all of these steps will apply to every student. Everyone will have to balance their total credit package against their ability to pay. We are under the impression that just with a few years of steady, active, visible use, that you would be in position by the time you're a senior to turn back to your original secured credit card grantor, for example, and ask for an unsecured card from that company, or find a competitor who might be interested in you now because you now have a substantial credit history.
And people you spoke with say that a college student could graduate with a healthy credit score in the high 600s if they really do follow best practices throughout their college career. That's not a bad credit rating to have when you are thrust into the real world.
If you've done everything right, there is a chance you could get into the high 600s by the time you're graduating from college, even higher in a couple of cases. But we would say, you know, at this point, you can qualify for a mainstream credit, and you should at all times be looking for the best possible terms, such as lower interest rates and lower payments annually or no payments annually.
The ideal credit rating is around 800?
The credit scoring, there are 100 different credit scoring models, and I'm actually not kidding there. There are probably 100 of them. Some of the most used are the FICO score, which is the one that the vast majority of lenders review before they decide whether or not to grant your application for credit. The FICO score is pretty much dominant. A Vantage score 3.0 is easily obtained through certain financial apps such as Mint or Credit Karma. These are going to be updating constantly, every month at least, so that you can watch your progress. They'll also give you a lot of tools for evaluating your score and improving it by helping you understand things like credit utilization and other factors.
All right. That is Wall Street Journal news editor Demetria Gallegos joining us here in our studio. Demetria, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, J.R.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for the Wall Street Journal.